Have you ever thought about all the cycles that surround you? The cycle of the sun and the moon, the change of seasons, and even the beating of your heart. Did you know that having regularity in your life can support your body's rhythms and improve your mood? That's right. I hear you ask, won't life get boring if it all becomes ritualistic? And how regular do you need to be? Well, stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Dr. Nerida, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Thanks for joining us for this very special series on depression. There are some delicate issues involving sexuality that Dr. Natalie and I need to discuss on today's show. So parents, you may not want your younger children watching this one. If insomnia is one of your problems, Dr. Natalie has some great ideas for you. Now, let's see how George is progressing at the Depression Recovery Program.
Well, probably my wife was most encouraging, and of course she probably suffered just as much as I did in a lot of regards. So, you know, we both realized this was a good thing, and it's something that I realized I needed to do. At that time, I had the ability. I had, for different reasons, with my job, I was able to do this. I had the time. At the time, I had the resources to do that for myself. So I thought that this was the time to do that. I was a very hard person. I wasn't physically abusive, but I was very much emotionally and just loud and hollering in anger. It was very tough on everybody. And I realized, you know, my problem is I never lived in the moment, in the present. I mean, I would at times when we were having fun with my friends, but I typically was either looking at the past and blaming it, or I was looking to the future. Some future event was going to come and something good would happen. So I was always looking to see when the good things were going to happen, not realizing that I had good things around me right now. And then I start seeing the pain and the consequences in my children's lives as they're becoming adults and they're getting married. And I had to get to a point where I could live in the moment and not keep living the way I was. Something had to be different and it had to be better. And so I went to the 10-day program, and I just learned amazing things. It was a fantastic 10 days. I totally excelled at it. You know, great instruction. It's a very rigid program from the time you get up all day long till the time you go to bed at night, which was great structure for my brain. I really needed that. And so they taught me so many things. The problems I had were nutrition, my circadian rhythm. I wasn't sleeping well at that bottom point. It was hard to get to sleep, and then I'd be waking up two or three times that evening. So I didn't have good sleep patterns, which my brain chemistry was off due to that, as well as other factors, my social and my lifestyle hits that I had. So they addressed all those issues, and they tailor-made for me what I need to have to make my life better.
Sounds like he made great progress. Now let's meet Dr. Neil Nedley, internal medicine physician and director of Nedley Health Solutions, in our Loma Linda studio. Dr. Nedley, as we've watched George's story, we've seen the element of a circadian hit.
Yes.
And now seasonal affective disorder is quite common, isn't it? How does that impact the brain, and what is it? How does it impact?
Well, it impacts it because of lack of light. You know, in the wintertime, particularly when you live up where he lives, there's not a lot of light in the daytime. And a lot of times people are indoors working in the daytime, and then, you know, by the time they go to work, there's not much light. By the time they come back, there's not much light. And so depression is much more commonplace in the winter especially. And that's why it's called seasonal affective disorder. And the solution to that is pretty simple. It's called light therapy.
Well, that sounds pretty basic.
It is pretty basic.
How do you get light as a therapy? Do you just turn your switch on and get it out of the light bulb?
No, that doesn't work.
Okay.
It turns out that indoor light is not enough. Even bright indoor light is not enough. You really need to get a medical grade light box. Either a white light box, or what we are preferring now are the blue light boxes. You don't need to have it as bright if it's blue light, but it's actually 380 nanometer wavelength, which is the same wavelength as the blue sky. And if you get that particularly in the morning, what helps set the circadian rhythm is not sleep, it's light. So if you get that light at 6 a.m., that sets you up to be sleepy between 9 and 10 p.m., and it helps to set the body clock. And it's actually a great therapy for insomnia. It's often not mentioned, but for people who can't sleep, therapy number one is light therapy in the morning for them to be able to go to sleep.
So is 6 a.m. a particular time?
It is the best time if you have a circadian rhythm hit, or somewhere between 5 and 6 would be the best time. After 7 or 8, it doesn't help set the body clock as much. And so we like that early light therapy is best.
So the light therapy, it needs to come from the side, doesn't it? If we get really practical about this.
Yes.
So you can buy a little light box.
Uh-huh.
And how long after you get up do you need to start using that?
It's best within 5 to 10 minutes of awakening is getting that light therapy. Some people actually, the high class light therapies, you can actually set to an alarm clock so it makes your gradually come on in the morning.
Oh, like the sun rising.
Yeah.
Nice.
But within 5 to 10 minutes or immediately upon awakening. Mm-hmm. The blue light, you don't need to have it as long, so it's about 20 minutes of light exposure to help set that body clock. Wouldn't hurt for it to be 30 minutes, but you can do your devotions, you can listen to good music, you can do some other things while you're being exposed to the light. But it is helpful, and it helps set that circadian rhythm and get rid of that circadian rhythm hit.
Now, a number of things in our bodies cycle, don't they? We have a diurnal variation of hormones and
Correct.
Neurotransmitters.
Yes.
How important is it for us to work with those things to really keep our brain?
It is important. And so we talk about regularity and schedule even in regards to eating. You know, if we eat at irregular times and those type of things, we don't actually digest our food as efficiently.
Yeah, because it's interesting. We have a lot of neural involvement in our gut.
Exactly.
And neurotransmitters are used for digestion just as they are by the brain.
That's right. Yeah, there's serotonin in the gut as well.
And so if someone is suffering from depression, it's really important to, hard as it is to sleep often or and to get up in the morning, just to have a really strict schedule.
Exactly.
And that's come out as people have shared about the residential program that you...
The structure.
And so you keep same time up in the morning, nice and early, same time for meals.
That's right.
How do you deal with it if you're on shift work?
Well, we prefer that you change jobs so you're not on shift work. But if you are having to be on the nighttime shift and it's going to be a while, the graveyard shift, we actually recommend that you get your light therapy at your 6 a.m. You would have to structure your 6 a.m. to be kind of at a different time, and then you actually sleep in a dark environment, even though you're sleeping in the daytime. Sleep in a dark environment where you can get the melatonin. And so you would have to design your own schedule based on your light box, and maybe even design your room so no light comes in, or get those Bose nightshades, you know, that they use in first class when you're going overseas. and really be able to make more melatonin at night that way.
Now, sleep is often an issue for someone who's depressed.
Yes.
Give us some tips for sleep hygiene.
Well, one of the most important things is when you go to bed, have a little bit of fresh air in the room, if at all possible. A little bit cooler as well can be helpful. A cleaner environment also can be helpful.
So not untidy.
In fact, that's one of the things we teach people in our depression recovery program. You'd be surprised, you know, day 4 or 5, if we don't tell them that, they can have clothes all over the place and even dirty clothes all over the place. You know, depression and lack of structure and untidiness often go together, not always, but often. So having that tidy room is important. But then also crucially important, when you go to sleep, find a comfortable position and hold that position for at least 20 minutes. Most people have insomnia, they toss and turn, but if you find a comfortable position and hold it, you're over 90% likely to be in stage 1 sleep by the end of 20 minutes. even if you have insomnia. So that's a little tip.
That's a real gift.
Yeah.
If you have restless leg, you might have trouble doing that. But so hold one position, just find your comfy spot and then hold it for 20 minutes.
Hold it for 20 minutes. Now after that, if you're still not asleep, you can find another comfortable position.
And hold that.
And hold, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. That's very practical. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So if you have insomnia, try those simple yet powerful tips. In a moment, Dr. Natalie will discuss how addictions impact depression. But first, we'll take a short break. When we come back, be ready for some high tryptophan mayonnaise. Stand by.
I was once in the town of Ljubljana in Slovenia. Across the river was a bridge where romantics from all over the world attached love padlocks with their names written on. These locks were locked and the keys thrown away to signify their eternal love for one another. Padlocks rust, people change, relationships end, but Jesus' love is everlasting.
Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand.
Welcome back to Go Healthy. We're in the kitchen with Phil today. Hi, Phil.
Hi.
What are you cooking up today?
Oh, we've got a great recipe for us today. A lot of us have condiments that are sitting in our house. They're loaded with preservatives. They've got lots of cholesterol, sugar, fat, all these things that we don't need much of. And so I have a terrific recipe that's going to substitute one of our condiments. It tastes delicious. It's great for you. It's very healthy.
Wow. So what is it?
It's tofu sour cream.
Yum. I love sour cream. I love sour cream in so many dishes.
It goes on anything. You can put it on some soups. You can put it on a potato. You can put it on so many things. So it's very versatile.
Wonderful. So what's in it?
It's a very basic recipe. So we have 1 cup of soft tofu, 1 teaspoon of onion powder, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 5 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, 1 clove of garlic, and 1 teaspoon of dill weed. So it's very basic. It's very simple, and it's got a bunch of good things that give you different nutrients.
Right, and the tofu, you know, we're talking about depression this week, and tofu is loaded with tryptophan. So this is a really good brain food, as well as tasting yummy. So what do you want me to do?
Excellent. Well, it's very basic. I'm going to have you start off by squeezing the lemon juice out of our lemon.
All right.
And this recipe is so easy. This is going to be the easiest one that you've dealt with, because you basically put all the ingredients together. You mix it, and you've got your recipe.
Wonderful. It's that easy, huh?
It's this easy. So we've got our garlic, we've got our tofu, which we put in there, our dill.
I love dill.
And dill has that great smell. And so you can really smell it. You get into the food and the cooking experience even more. We've got our onion powder and our salt. And the important thing about salt is that you want to get sea salt. Because if you go for table salt, it's refined, it has preservatives, they take some of the minerals out, and they add, you know, the bleaching elements, they add these preservatives, and so if you go for the sea salt, you have salt that doesn't have these minerals removed.
You forgot something really important. The last piece of garlic.
The last piece of garlic, you know, and I love garlic, so yeah. I'm disappointed in myself that I left any of it out.
Sorry, and you were saying the type of salt we choose is important, so sea salt is the way to go.
Yes, especially. And a lot of people can't have much sodium in their diets. Sea salt usually has a stronger taste, and so you usually need less of it.
So you get less sodium.
That's
and
exactly
then,
it.
And iodized is good. If you live in a country that the soil is deficient in iodine, it is one way to get some iodine. So that can be helpful, you know, because especially for pregnant women, low iodine reduces the IQ of their unborn child. So it's just really important.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, one more reason to have this recipe.
Exactly.
So we simply blend it. And
Our recipe is done.
Wow. Fabulous. Now, you could use that on broccoli, collie, where you might use a white sauce normally. This would make a lovely white sauce.
Oh, it'd be terrific. And it's got that dill taste, which is a delicious herb.
It is. It's a very delicate flavor, hasn't it?
I like to put this basically for anything that you're going to use sour cream on. And I like to put on maybe like a black bean soup. We've got it here plated on a potato, which is just a terrific way to enjoy one.
Or in your burrito, or
And with this, you're getting extra protein. It's a whole protein, so you're getting terrific nutrients out of this.
Yeah, all your essential amino acids are in the soybean, so, and you get the extra calcium in tofu. Well, let's try this. Oh, it's got a marvelous zing, and I can feel it, taste that dill coming through. Now, Joseph's work performance was on the line. Take a look at what happens as he tries to land a commercial aircraft.
So we land, no big uneventful landing, normal landing, but I knew something was very, very wrong. And at this point, and I knew that I had failed my own expectations. And so the next day I told the chief pilot that something was wrong and I need to stop flying. I need to go get some help. I don't know what's wrong, but I could not perform the most basic function. It was my responsibility. And as a result of that, I took myself off of flying status and went to the process of getting some help. And my mother is, I mentioned to her that what had happened. She says, well, Joe, I'm going to a depression recovery program. I'm not going for me. She had been going to a seminar program that Dr. Nedley's seminar program for depression recovery. And so I said, well, I haven't got anything. She goes, well, I would like for you to come with me. I said, well, I'm already on the bottom. I can't get any lower. I hit the bottom really hard. And that's God's way of waking me up. He was telling me, you know, you've been begging me for help and you've been ignoring everything that I've been offering. So I let you hit the bottom. So now you can wake up. And I bounced really hard, but luckily my mom was there and she said, I'm here. And I would like, the answer to the prayer was, I want you to come to take a look at this. And of course, I didn't know it was an answer to the prayer. You never do until you look back. I go to the program, and the process is you checked in, they do a full examination to make sure that you're going to be okay. And right away, you're getting up early in the morning, and you get the light machines, and you have your exercise in the morning, and then you have your appointments during the day, whether it be out in the sun, counseling, or whatever it may be, and exercising. Just basically a doctor's appointment with Dr. Nettie, where he reviews all the paperwork. And I told him what was going on, and he looked at my sleep apnea paperwork, and he said, you don't understand. I'm there for 3 days, it's three full days, and that night I had my first dream in over 20 years. And I slept for the first time. I think I slept 8 hours for the first time that I could ever remember in more than 25 years. I was, all the cognitive behavior stuff, I was lying to myself, telling myself I was bad, hitting myself, yelling at myself for making stupid mistakes. My mistakes were stupid, so therefore I'm stupid. And since I'm stupid, I shouldn't be able to be successful. And just talking all the cognitive behavior things, the distortions and the lies and all that stuff that's associated with cognitive behavior. And so I began to understand what I had been doing to myself. Nobody else was doing this. I was doing it all to myself. And when I went home, immediately, people that knew me said I was a completely different person from appearance. They said my blue eyes were brighter, my skin had changed color. I hadn't lost any weight that I knew of, but I looked healthier today. My skin looked healthy. My demeanor was completely different. Everybody has a certain radiance, but you know, every human has a radiance, and my radiance had changed to much more positive radiance. And I was a much more pleasant person to be around, and I began to enjoy things. I actually, but I never before said I would like something, that I liked something. People say, what do you think about this? I said, it's all right. Life was kind of mediocre. But I liked that. That's pretty. Bird sounds great. It's a beautiful sky. Look at those neat clouds. And that was after I had shortly come home from the program. And I continued through some counseling and through some help. I found a good cognitive behavior therapist, and I continued that once a week.
Realizing your need for help is half the battle. Now it's time to continue the interview with Dr. Nedley.
We've just seen Joseph's story, and that's such a great story. But, you know, one of Joseph's hits was addictions.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned at the start of this series about addictions being substances and non-substances addictions.
Correct.
What were the substances that we often involved?
Well, alcohol. I mean, Joseph will be clear that, he had an alcohol issue. What he found in the program was that instead of just dealing with the alcohol part, because of its comprehensive part, he had so many more tools to prevent him going back into that addiction again. Mm. So it was a crucial, even though it was a depression recovery program, he called it the most effective alcohol recovery program he'd been to. He'd been to other right. ones that the military had, and they were good as well, but not in comparison. Mm. When we improve our mental health, we become much more addiction-proof. Really, any addiction recovery program should be addressing the mental health and particularly enhancing the frontal lobe of the brain.
So that would include even just cigarettes?
That's right, yeah.
Nicotine,
tobacco.
Nicotine, caffeine.
That's right.
Okay.
And also getting rid of the addictions together is helpful. You know, for instance, studies have shown that if you give up caffeine at the same time you give up tobacco, mm-hmm. you're 5 times less likely to go back to smoking.
And do you stay off of both of them?
Stay off of both of them.
Stay off both.
That's right.
Wow.
Caffeine and cigarettes go hand in hand, and a lot of these addictions go hand in hand, so they kind of fuel off each other. And so when we get rid of all of the addictions at the same time, which of course the program does, it's a much higher success rate.
Hmm. What about the non-substance addictions? What are some of those?
Well, we talked about before techno addict, we mm-hmm. talked about, you know, gambling is a big one in our society that's dramatically increasing.
Yeah.
Self-mutilation, TV addictions, internet addictions, entertainment type of addictions, rock music can be highly addictive, heavy metal music. But one of the big ones is... the sexual addictions, pornography, masturbation have become major issues that are adversely affecting brain chemistry.
Wow. So all of those non-substance, we're almost surrounded in our environment, in our society.
We are, yeah. You know, it used to be, heavily criticized, it was as a cultural norm not to go those directions now. But the change that's occurred in culture and those things are almost promoting.
Mm.
You have all of these entertainment people going into casinos to do their music, to bring people into the gambling situation, et cetera. And then you have all of these, the easy access to pornography. You know, before you had to go to some bad place in town and pay for it, and everyone knew that you were kind of doing it, et cetera. And now you can do it privately in your own home with 3 clicks of the mouse and, have all this availability of, quotes, novel partners there. The effects of this, we're now discovering, are terrible in regards to the brain, hormone levels, androgen receptors, estrogen receptors. I mean, it's a major problem. It is something that is not ideal, not anywhere close.
So what does it do to the brain?
Well, the interesting thing is in regards to the pornography part of things, although it can be stimulating at first, in the longer run, it actually lowers dopamine levels. It lowers dopamine receptors. So
a structural change.
It's a structural change, by lowering the dopamine receptors. It'll also lower androgen receptors. And so even though you have testosterone, it's mm-hmm. not producing the testosterone-like effect. This is why impotency and pornography go together.
Mm-hmm.
We're having individuals in their 20s that are having significant erectile dysfunction issues simply because of what they've done to their androgen receptors from being on this on a habitual basis, doing it, you know, sometimes every day and multiple times a day. It plays its toll very early in life, and it can be a major issue.
Now, can they recover from that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the good news is they can recover. They can change those receptors.
And it's addictive because we can't get enough of what we don't need.
Exactly.
That's what you always say.
That's right. Yeah, you can never get enough of what you don't need because what you don't need will never satisfy you.
Thank you.
What you don't need will never satisfy. God can give you the victory over your addictions. He can also fulfill that longing in your heart. In fact, he says you will thirst no more. Now, when we come back from the break, it'll be time to learn about exercise and how to put it into practice. But first, let's watch today's medical news report. Here we are at the University of Maryland, and I'm talking today with Dr. Hinda Dubin, who is a psychiatrist. Hinda, tell us about the impact that exercise has on the brain, on depression.
Well, there have been a lot of studies that show that exercise actually helps improve mood very much. One particular study looked at people who had been treated with an SSRI. SSRIs are medications like fluoxetine, paroxetine, sertraline, escitalopram, those types of medications, and had not had full improvement. And so they added exercise to their regimen. And they actually divided the patients into two groups. One group had a mild increase in exercise. The other group had a more vigorous increase in exercise. Both groups improved as a result of exercising more.
Burning question, which one did better? The milder exercise or the really vigorous exercise?
I know all us couch potatoes would love to hear the mild exercisers, but in this case, vigorous exercise is best.
So what was classified as vigorous exercise? Just to give our viewers an idea, was it a certain number of days a week, certain number of minutes, heart rate? How did they grade vigorous versus mild exercise?
So one group did about 60 minutes of exercise a week, and the more vigorous group did 132 minutes of exercise per week. So the more, the better.
Well, that's really practical because 132 minutes is about 20 minutes a day. If we were to exercise every day, if we cut down to, say, 5 days a week, we're probably looking at half an hour a day that should have the optimal impact on the brain.
You know, exercise is probably good for just about everybody. So whether someone's depressed or not depressed, adding more exercise to your day is probably a good idea.
Yes, it's going to deal with stress, mood enhancement. You don't have to be sick to get the benefit of exercise.
And it doesn't have to be complicated or equipment dependent. You could go outside, get a walk, take the stairs instead of the elevator. There are lots of ways to add physical activity to your day.
Sounds great. I'll bet you get your patients exercising.
I try.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you.
When I lived in Japan, I had a friend who was an artist. She painted beautiful, intricate designs on silk fabric that were used to make kimonos. She invited me to her studio, and when I walked in, I saw this long table in the middle of this room. And on this table was about 10 to 12 yards of silk fabric. The work that she would do was so detailed, so intricate, but yet so amazingly beautiful. She would take her time, and sometimes it would take her 6 months to finish a 10-yard panel. I visited her one day, but she was doing something very interesting. With a magnifying glass in hand, she was going over every single inch of that fabric, checking her work to make sure that everything was good. It took her a long time because she did it slowly and carefully. And then she put down the magnifying glass, and with a smile of satisfaction on her face, she said, "It is good." The Bible tells us that God created this world and all living things in 6 days, and he rested after he was finished because all was good.
I Of all our organs, the brain uses by far the most oxygen. So working the muscles so hard that they steal oxygen away from the brain is not going to enhance your mood or your brain function. Yesterday, you learned how to calculate your personal training zone, and you learned how to train in the aerobic zone, where your brain and your muscles can share oxygen. However, there's more to staying fit and improving your mood than just working out in the zone. Joining us again from Washington Adventist University is Coach Parker. Tell us, some people just jog. That's all they do for fitness.
And that's not enough, because as we get older, our bone density starts to drop and muscle tone, et cetera. So we want to stay strong and we want to stay fit cardiovascularly.
Right, and you're working with young people, and strength is really important for all kinds of sports.
Absolutely. So as we get stronger, our bodies become more neuromuscularly better at running, so we get more efficient.
Right, and strength training is as good as aerobic exercise at combating depression, and they're both as good as counseling, according to a Harvard study. So this is part of your therapy. So give us some strength training.
So here we go. Are you ready? You
sure?
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to add three exercises in this circuit. All right. So I'm going to start on the rower.
All right.
Okay? And we're going to go for about 15 seconds. Okay. And we're going to switch. You're going to start in push-ups. Okay.
All right. So, you're going to give me my worst exercise.
I'm sorry.
Oh,
you got to do it.
Yeah, I'll make you pay later.
So you can start with the push-ups. I'll start on the bike, and then I'm going to go to a reverse lunge and a press while you jump on the bike, and then you'll follow me.
Oh, sounds like okay. A plan. All right. So
that?
This is aerobic, and these two are strength.
So we got to exactly, because we want to combine the best of both, best of two worlds, right?
And it's made it fun.
Absolutely.
If it's not the push-ups, but okay, here we go.
All right. You ready?
Ready.
Matt, I don't know if that was enthusiasm.
And we're just going to do five. I just do five of these, and then yeah. I do some reverse lunges.
Yes, all right. And I'm going to go as hard as I can, trying to get my heart rate up to that 152 beats per minute.
Okay,
ready?
Great.
All right, let's go. Tell me when you get there. All right, she's done. All right, there you go. Now I'm down in the push-ups while you go ahead and do your lunges. Ready? You gotta love them.
How many
more
you got?
Two more? One and two. All right. All right, Doc, you're on the bike.
There we go. All right.
Let's go. Now take over here on your lunges. All right, here we go.
Oh, I like rowing. I have to pretend I'm out on the water.
Here we go. Pressing up. There we go. Work. All right, we got two more. Come on,
right.
You gotta get their heart rate up. 150. At least that's my training zone.
Yeah.
And last one. There. Done.
All right. Okay. Well, that was good. Now, you know that strength training is gonna, as you said, build muscle, make you look good. It's gonna increase insulin sensitivity, so that's really good for diabetes. Increase our metabolic rate, so we're gonna lose fat faster.
Absolutely.
As you mentioned, strengthen bones, so that's for osteoporosis. Going to boost our stamina for a cardiovascular disease, or to prevent it. And it's good for even for back pain, arthritis.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely. So the lunges are working on those muscles in the glutes, which are going to improve any back problems that you may have.
And flexibility and those things. You know, we were lifting over our heads and keeping everything
Absolutely.
Limber. And the really important thing. It's going to sharpen focus, help that brain work. And it's been proven that strength training is necessary to combat dementia.
Absolutely.
So it's been great. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's been excellent. Tomorrow we'll see how two people can train together and still both stay in the aerobic zone.
Is a tomato a vegetable or a fruit? Well, when it comes to preventing ovarian cancer, tomatoes might be the queen of fruit. Women who eat tomatoes more than five times per week have a significantly lower risk of ovarian cancer than women who occasionally or never eat them. Women who regularly consumed fruit also had a lower risk, according to the Adventist Health Study. Salsa, anyone? Eating tomatoes at least five times a week is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. Now I'm going to answer the questions you've texted, called, and posted on Facebook for me. One caller asked, should you try to use only organic produce for juicing? Well, organic is ideal, both for nutrition and in terms of herbicide and pesticide contamination. However, organic is not always available or affordable. Now, to help us out, the Environmental Working Group has created a website where they rank produce for chemical contamination. They have the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen. So go to EWG, that's for environmentalworkinggroup.org, and check it out. Another caller asked, what do you do with the pulp from juicing? Well, you can freeze it. And then when it's time to make some vegetable stock or soup, you can actually boil it up and you can make a nice stock with it. A texter asked, please help me in curbing my appetite. God bless. Well, what I would advise is to drink plenty of water between meals. If you get hungry, it's not time to eat yet, drink a glass of water. That's going to tide you over for at least half an hour to an hour. Stay busy. Sometimes we eat just because we're bored. And avoid snacking. Just make snacking a no-go zone. Chew every mouthful 15 to 20 times. Don't be distracted by the TV or the internet. Be mindful of what you're eating and how much you're eating. And if that doesn't help, then fast on water for a day. And if that doesn't help, then start logging everything you eat and count the calories. That'll make it really tedious. Alicia posted on Facebook, what do you advise to help quit internet chatting addictions? Well, Alicia, what you need to do is go cold turkey. You really don't need to go into chat rooms. So go cold turkey and then get support from others around you. Someone who's going to hold you accountable and ask you every day, have you been in a chat room? Then make a list of the things that are more important to you than chatting and fill your life with those things. It might be, for example, reading or cycling or spending time with friends and family. It might be furthering your education. It may be getting a job. But set some goals for yourself, work towards them, and the chatting will fall away. Thanks for sending those questions. Call us with your health question. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. And remember, you can also text us or post your questions on our Facebook page. We've all experienced the depression that follows loss. Let's see how Marsha's doing with her grief.
Through the past year, I have been much deeper into the Bible than I was, and realizing, seeing that it's for me and what Jesus did was personal for each one of us. And so even though our year got worse, things got much worse, in a way they were better because we knew God was right there taking care of us, taking care of our daughter, and that He loves us, and Jesus died for us. And so every day we pray and we put our thoughts on what God is doing and what He has done that we can be grateful for, which is much. We have so much to be grateful for. So even though we're actually still in this sad situation, we've had so many days when the joy of the Lord just comes in such wonderful power. So I think it is the NADWAY program, the 10-day program, really helped me to take control of my thoughts, to realize that God is still working, He's still right there with us, that Jesus went through some of these same things when He was on earth. He was rejected. He was, separated. His friends left Him at the most important time when He needed them the most. So we each can connect with what Jesus did for us.
Dr. Natalie, Marsha's story brings out something that is really has such a close association with depression, and that's grief. We often have reactive depression when we lose something.
That's right.
But, you know, there's more than just losing a person, isn't there? There's more than just the death of someone close. There are other losses that we can sustain in life.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, loss of a job. Mm. You know,
a lot of that about at the moment.
That's right, exactly. You know, loss of a home, foreclosure, you know, financial losses. And one that's often not talked about is loss of a vision. This is where you actually planned on doing something, were kind of developing your whole life around something, and then it didn't happen. Mm. And loss of a vision is one of those big losses. It's up there close to, you know, loss of a loved one, like in Marsha's case. And so how to overcome loss is a crucial component that we all need to learn more about. You know, we kind of weren't originally designed to handle losses because they weren't really meant to be, so to speak. But how well we handle losses and how well we can overcome from losses, and particularly the crucial element is how to grow from a loss. If we learn how to grow from a loss, it can actually be health-giving, despite the fact that we have gone through a loss. And that's what Marsha learned in the process, was how to grow from this loss. She was so bent on regards to the adverse effects of this loss.
Which we often are.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's a natural response.
We focus on what we no longer have.
That's right, exactly.
So what did Marsha do? How did she grow out of that?
Well, one of the ways in which she grew is she started to recognize that there were some certain things in her own life that really weren't necessarily related to the loss, but maybe even led to it to a certain extent. And so she began to improve her own mental health, and then recognize what was it about this relationship that she valued, and how can she carry on with values and at the same time take care of the things that were not so good about the relationship, to set up thoughts and patterns that would be more healthy. And so in reality, it gets back to also not overblowing the loss, which we have a tendency to do. My world has ended. You know, there's a lot of mothers that would conclude after a relationship with their daughter that's no longer there, that their world has ended. You know, mothering is such an important part of life, and when you can't mother anymore, you know, you can have those conclusions. But in reality, your world hasn't ended. Your world is still going on, and there's still a lot of good things that can happen in your life. And so she began to improve her own mental health, and thus, as a result, she set up, even though the situation is unresolved, she set up now that if there is some opportunity for resolution, it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be good for both mother and daughter.
Yeah, we'll have to pray that that happens.
Exactly.
For Marsha.
Yes.
Now, in your work, you talk about the difference between grief and mourning. What are the differences?
Grief is the emotional reaction that occurs after we experience the loss of someone or something of great value. Mourning is the psychological process that occurs when we experience loss.
So the mourning is something that we can actually be involved in and actually be strategic about.
Exactly. And just like when we have a broken bone, there's some steps that need to happen for that bone to heal.
Sure.
It's not just time that heals wounds. You know, one of the big falsehoods out there is that time will take care of it. No, it's working through that process, through time, that produces healing. And not only can we heal, but actually we can grow. And it's often in the valleys that we grow. You know, the mountaintops are glorious, but it's in the valleys that we grow. And so we need to utilize those times to actually become far better people. We can develop things like patience. We can develop things like gratitude. And we can actually have some positive psychology interventions that occur as a result of a healthy mourning process that actually turns us into a better individual.
Yes, there's a saying, through these valleys, we can become bitter or better. And
that's right.
And it doesn't, as you're saying, doesn't just happen. It's a lot of work sometimes to actually.
That's right. That. But you know, for people to recognize that there are steps that they can go through, that anybody can go through after a loss, is actually empowering to them.
Any resources that you could recommend to our viewers to do that if they find that they're stuck in a grief process, in a mourning process?
Well, of course, one of them would just be our resources on depression, The Way Out. We do have a whole section on that. And of course, the other things that we talk about, like nutrition and exercise, also help in regards to grief recovery. And then the cognitive behavioral therapy process that we put the individual through is going through that program to recognize the distorted thoughts and how they can healthfully think thoughts of the individual that they've lost and put it into appropriate perspective or crucial. So that would probably be a good start right there.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Cognitive behavioral therapy, it requires time and effort, but it can change your whole attitude to life. So if you're mad, sad, or think life is bad, try cognitive behavioral therapy. Heading into a break, we still have lots to cover with Dr. Natalie, but first, let's go shopping. Fennel is a vegetable that grows as a weed in many areas. Every part of the plant is edible. The flowers are the most potent. Seeds are best used fresh, and are an essential ingredient in spice mixtures in the East. It's been reported to help colic in babies, digestion in adults, menstrual pain in women, coughs, and if the seeds are powdered and left in kennels and stables, it drives the fleas away. The leaves are delicately flavored and can be used in soups or added to salads. The bulb is a crisp vegetable that can be sautéed, stewed, braised, grilled, or eaten raw. Its Italian name is Pinocchio, rhymes with Pinocchio. Bon appetit!
It's the all-new, updated In Prayer app, reminding you to pray at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. 7 days a week. Prayer requests and stories. The daily devotional. All the latest videos. And social media integration through Facebook and Twitter, plus many more features. Now available free for iPhone, iPad, and Android.
Whatever your anxieties and trials, spread out your case before the Lord. Your spirit will be braced for endurance. The way will be open for you to disentangle yourself from embarrassment and difficulty. The weaker and more helpless you know yourself to be, the stronger will you become in His strength. The heavier your burdens, the more blessed the rest in casting them upon your burden bearer.
As I was reading The Great Hope, this phrase caught my attention. When the Savior was about to be separated from His disciples, He comforted them in their sorrow with the assurance that He would come again. He said, "Let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself." John 14:1-3. Here is why this brings me hope. The angels repeated this promise. John, Paul, many writers have reminded us of this. All through the ages, hope of the faithful has been looking forward to Christ's return. I see suffering, pain, persecution, sorrow all around, and I know that soon this will end when Christ fulfills His promise.
Welcome back. Remember to call in your health question at 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can text us on 301-960-5144. Today we're discussing depression with Dr. Nedley. But before we join him, let's see if Mackenzie made it through the inpatient program.
The first days I cried. I, didn't want to get out of my bed. I was so depressed. And I was even having anxiety attacks. I had to go to Paula several times and we would have to go on a walk to calm me down and, to make sure that I was gonna be all right. So as the program went along, I did all the techniques, I participated, and each day it just continued to get better and better. My life was changing. God really worked this program. It allowed me to take every aspect and use it as a tool to help me. My energy was restored. I was able to enjoy life and actually live. I had never felt this happy in my entire life. I knew that through this program, things were going to get better. I had goals that I was going to achieve. When I got back home from the program, it all stayed. I looked better. All my friends and family saw how much I had changed, how happy I looked, and just the drastic changes in myself. While I was at the program, I learned several techniques and tools in order to create a better living. They changed, you know, we changed the diet into a vegan diet where it just made my body feel so much better. I was able to exercise like I needed to, and it really restored my energy. We listened to, you know, classical music and some different kinds of music, and that really helped clear your mind. We did deep breathing, which was very helpful in just clearing your mind and taking care of yourself. I was able to become a better mother, a better friend, and I didn't depend on others. I just depended on myself, and I knew that through God's help and the tools that I had, that it was all going to be all right. My life was just going up from there. God helped me the whole way, and He's definitely the number one factor that helped me through all of it.
Wow. Taking personal responsibility for your own happiness can be a major step, especially for young people. There's one more fascinating therapy that we need to talk about with Dr. Nedley.
Dr. Nedley, you mentioned Depression, the Way Out. Now, that's kind of your textbook, isn't it?
That's right.
But it's your textbook for something pretty special. How do you use that book?
Well, it's often utilized in a community-based mental health education program. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, they're being held in many places throughout the country and throughout the world. And this is a place where you can go in your own local community and go with a group of individuals that are interested in improving their mental health. And it happens for 8 weeks, one night a week for 8 weeks. It has the textbook with it. It has the DVD that you go to the community and watch. And then it has a workbook that you go through. And there are facilitators that are there that can train and coach you, so to speak, in improving your mental health.
So this is about coaching. It's not replacing your health professionals. It's about coaching you to learn some new skills that can be put in your toolbox.
Correct, yeah. Often physicians and health care givers in the community actually recommend this as a supplement to what they're doing. So it's not a replacement for what they're doing, but it actually is an add-on that can be very helpful.
Now, Mackenzie's story is such a great story. There's one hit that she mentions in her story, which was, or one therapy, I should say, that she mentions, which was music therapy.
Yes.
You use this in your depression programs.
Absolutely, yeah. Music therapy can be very helpful in improving the frontal lobe circulation of the brain. It can improve mood, it can lower cortisol levels, it can actually have some very positive subjective as well as objective benefits.
And is it any kind of music?
No, it's not.
It's not.
Not just enjoyable music.
I thought
music.
You were going to say that. So tell us what kinds of, how would you select the music that's going to be good for your brain? And is the other stuff neutral or is it bad for the brain?
Well, some music can actually be bad for the brain. It can actually set the brain up for a frontal lobe hit. And this is music, particularly, you know, your syncopated rock and roll rhythms or your dissonant types of music. The syncopated rock and roll, within about 90 seconds to 3 minutes of listening to that, you actually go into an alpha wave rhythm in which you're kind of in a hypnotic trance, which actually suppresses the frontal lobe of the brain. And it can be addictive. In fact, anything that suppresses the frontal lobe of the brain can set you up for an addiction. Wow. One of the reasons why alcohol is addictive is because it suppresses the frontal lobe of the brain.
Yeah, it does take a hit. So tell us, what's the good music? What's left?
Well, what's left? Well, in our society today, unfortunately, one of the reasons why depression is increasing is because of the prevalence of entertainment and music that suppresses the frontal lobe. Mm. But there is music still out there that does benefit you. And if it's melodious and has some non-dissonance harmonies, mm-hmm. or centers in primarily on beautiful harmonies that are non-dissonance, mm-hmm. If it's straight rhythms compared to syncopated rhythms, even march rhythms can be okay. Mm. And if the melody and harmony are more prominent than the rhythm itself, and if the music has a tendency to tell a story where you can kind of imagine a scene that is occurring, particularly if it goes along with the words, or even if there's no words in the music, if you can imagine a scene that goes along with that, that's healthy.
Wow.
And that's beneficial for the brain and can improve the frontal lobe, and this is the type of music we center in on.
Mm.
Fortunately, there are more different varieties of healthy music than there are all of the unhealthy musics combined.
So
there's a lot of different variety. Yeah.
There's lots of choice out there.
A lot of times people think, boy, the only way I can, you know, listen to good classical music is if they go to a funeral, because that's the only time the typical person has heard it is when they go to a funeral. But funeral music is only one type of classical music, and that type of classical music isn't necessarily the healthiest for the brain. And there's a lot of other types of classical music. Baroque music in particular is very helpful. Handel wrote for a king who was severely depressed, and his music is very antidepressant in character. And so there's a lot of, and there's also modern compositions that center in on this type of music that helps the frontal lobe of the brain.
So there's a lot of choice out there. We don't all have to listen to the same music to get the therapy.
That's right.
That's great. Thank you so much for being on the show today. We've learned so much. Today, we've discussed the importance of having a routine for getting up in the morning, eating your meals, and going to bed. Using light and music as effective therapies. Dealing with destructive addictions. And working through grief to become healthy and whole again. That's all from us today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you tomorrow for our final and most important episode with Dr. Nevi. Don't miss it.